This is Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Less than a week after the 22-member Arab League summit on Iraq, the 57-member Organization of the Islamic Conference held an emergency meeting today to discuss the ways and means to avert a war with Iraq. As the U.S. and Britain are deploying more troops and military equipment to the region, the summit voiced hope that a miracle could take place to stop the war. Ula Farahwati has this report.
55 members of the Organization of the Islamic Conference, convening in an emergency summit in Doha, Qatar, voted no to a war in Iraq and demanded that Washington give diplomacy a chance. Members of the organization, that represents more than a billion Muslims, said Iraq should show more cooperation with the international community and with the UN. Summit President Qatari Emir Hamad bin Khalifa Al Thani.
We cannot claim that we can change the international resolution, but we can sure influence this decision and its effects and consequences, provided that we work together and stick to our goals. These goals are dictated to us by our mutual interests and by the fact that we are a one Muslim nation.
President Yasser Arafat also addressed the summit today through a televised speech. His remarks come on the backdrop of an Israeli incursion into the West Bank and Gaza that left dozens dead. And as he was speaking, a massive explosion ripped through a bus in the Israeli port city of Haifa. The explosion killed at least 15 Israelis.
We support all the international efforts to solve this crisis peacefully. We support the continuation of inspections in accordance with Resolution 1441, and we should give the UN inspectors ample time to finish their assignments for the sake of ending this crisis, especially since Israel is insisting on escalating its violence.
The summit witnessed a proposal by Iran that envisaged a meeting between Iraqi leadership and the Iraqi opposition, as well as a public referendum in Iraq on the legitimacy of the Iraqi leadership. Iran, a historic foe of Iraq, suggested that the referendum be carried out under the supervision of the UN. A United Arab Emirates proposal asking President Saddam Hussein to step down was submitted to the summit, but never discussed. However, Kuwait voiced its full backing of the proposal. Kuwaiti Foreign Minister Subah Ahmed Subah.
Kuwait fully supports this initiative that aims at safeguarding the unity of Iraq, sparing the Iraqi people the destruction and devastation, and sparing the entire region of devastating war.
This motion enraged Iraq's Vice President Izzat Ibrahim, who called Kuwait's foreign minister a, quote, rude monkey, unquote, and said Baghdad is raising a 7 million soldier army to defend the country.
Iraq entered Kuwait in 1990, and what happened happened. And we can tell you in detail all the consequences of this on Kuwait in terms of morale and material loss. And every year after that, Iraq is losing because of Kuwaiti plotting and their cooperation with the Zionism and the imperialism, 10 times as much as Kuwait has lost. Shut up, you dwarf, you traitor, you monkey.
The gathering added an Islamic voice to those of the Arab League and the Non-Aligned Movement, both of which are now on record as opposing a U.S.-led military campaign to invade Iraq. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, this is Ula Farahwati in Amman, Jordan.
Embassy Row in Washington, D.C. was awash in bright pink wigs and umbrellas this afternoon. About 36 demonstrators from the Code Pink Women's Peace Vigil, Global Exchange of San Francisco, and D.C.'s Institute for Policy Studies went to the governments of Turkey, France, and Russia in thanks for their efforts to find a peaceful solution to the standoff with Iraq. The demonstrators asked the governments of Mexico and Chile to stand up to the U.S. pressure for the next U.N. war vote, which could happen as soon as next week. Rada Lewis and Josh Chaffin bring us this report.
Nous sommes une groupe de femmes américaines qui sont contre la guerre en Irak. Nous revenons d'ailleurs
to the government of France. Thank you for listening to your people's call for peace from Code Pink, Institute for Policy Study, and Global Exchange.
Aux inspecteurs pour terminer leur travail avec nos sentiments respectueux. Vive la France.
Vive la France. What we are here to say is Beaujolais and Brie, not bombs.
Beaujolais and Brie. Not both.
Hi, John Cavanaugh from the Institute for Policy Studies.
You're again, Kurdish Press Secretary for the Russian Embassy.
Very good to meet you.
We wanted to come here today to say thank you to the Russians for the position that you have taken that is seeking to find a peaceful solution to this conflict.
Thank you for your support, and I would like to reiterate that our position, official position of the Russian government, is that the situation around Iraq should be resolved only by peaceful means. We are absolutely for the disarmament of Iraq, but it should be made on the basis of the Resolution 1441 of the United Nations Security Council. And we think that inspections should go on, and we should have address specific issues by specific means. And we have seen that Iraq has begun to cooperate. He's destroying its missiles. And we think that the peaceful, so the only way to resolve the Iraq problem is by peaceful means. And thank you for your support for our position. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I thank you for your visit to our embassy.
Okay.
And
if you could pass this on to the Turkish parliament, we realize there are several hundred people there. And we want to urge you as well. We know that there will be enormous pressure on the Turkish parliament in the days to come. We are very impressed that you have stood up to billions of promised aid in making this this historic vote. And we would urge you to stand strong if there is a second vote and once again vote for peace.
All right.
So thank you.
Success.
How do you say peace in Turkish?
Barış.
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 B-A-R-I-S.
Barış.
Yes.
Barış.
Barış.
I came from Colorado because I feel really strongly that the way that the U.S. government is proceeding in the situation with Iraq is incorrect and is likely, very, very likely, to create much more danger on the world front and much more danger for us as a country. I think the cost of the war in human life, in money that could be spent well in terms of human services and really making us a leader in the world in terms of human rights and really solving many of the problems of the world is being spent or proposed to being spent in ways that I think will be extremely damaging.
It's Amy Quinn from the Institute for Policy Studies. We are at the Chilean Embassy on Embassy Row to deliver a note of thanks and a sign that says thank you for listening to your people and a packet of flowers to the Chilean Embassy from the peace movement and from Code Pink, and to just say, you know, once again, we support you, thank you so much, and stay strong and remain firm against the U.S. call for war.
We are extremely grateful for your government's position so far of holding back and not supporting war, for allowing the inspectors more time, for the desire to find a way other than war to solve this conflict. And we want you to know that there are millions and millions of us in the United States that are thankful to you and asking you to continue to hold strong and work for peace.
Despite what our government says to you, that relations could be harmed by you abstaining or voting no on this vote, that in the long run we feel that your relations with the American people and with future American governments will be stronger if you stand up for peace and oppose, or actually just abstain. We go for an abstention in the...
Yeah, thanks all for coming, and we will certainly convey your message to Santiago. Okay. We are actually receiving lots of phone calls and emails, and mm-hmm. we're conveying them to Santiago.
Okay.
Telling them this is what's happening right now.
Okay, thank you.
Your name is Eve, what?
Libertone?
This weekend you got something planned.
You know, most of our big events are going to be happening the 7th, 8th, and 9th. We have a teach-in all day. There's going to be many different workshops. There'll be a concert on Friday night, and there's going to be poets, performers, Michelle Schacht, Alice Walker will be there. And then Saturday is the big rally in March, and there's about 20 speakers, including Helen Caldicott and Jody Williams and Alice Walker, Barbara Ehrenreich. So people from, you know, authors, activists. And then we'll be marching down 16th Street to encircle the White House and letting the world know that women are standing up for peace.
Those were the voices of Ralph Kavanaugh and Amy Quinn from the Institute for Policy Studies, Madia Benjamin, Eve Libertone, and Judith Ansaragas from the Women's Peace Group Code Pink, and the D.C. Embassy staff of Chile, Russia, Turkey, and France. Thanks to Free Speech Radio News reporter Josh Chaffin and Rada Lewis from the D.C. Radio Co-op for that piece. The call from the global peace movement for a deeper examination into a U.S.-led invasion of Iraq may finally be getting a response from mainstream media outlets. Last night, ABC News anchor Ted Koppel hosted a town hall meeting in Washington, D.C. to answer the question, attack Iraq? Why now? Peace Watch correspondent Ingrid Drake was there and has his report.
More than 300 people showed up for the taping of Nightline in a church in downtown Washington. Against the backdrop of a crucifix and an altar, ABC News host Ted Koppel was joined on stage by Senators Carl Levin and John McCain, former CIA Director John Woolsey, former U.S. Ambassador to Iraq John Wilson, Richard Land of the Southern Baptist Convention, and Susan Thistlewaite, ordained minister with the United Church of Christ. Members of the audience were invited to ask questions to the panelists.
Why are we going to go into Iraq, topple Saddam Hussein, install a democracy that could possibly lead to a democratic Iraq that votes an Islamic fundamentalist party into power that could possibly lead the way to a Taliban-like state? Jordan has postponed elections twice now because of the rise of fundamentalist Islam in Jordan. And I'm afraid this might happen again in Iraq.
Reverend Land.
Don't the Iraqis have a right to decide for themselves? And people say, oh, let them do it themselves. We didn't do it ourselves. We'd still be singing, you know, God Save the Queen, if it weren't for the French fleet that bottled up the British Army at Yorktown. They need help, and we're going to give it to them.
Reverend Thistlethwaite, you've been wanting to make a more general point, which I think is probably appropriate right now.
I think there's an acceptance amongst our friends here that it's just a matter of delay. I think that the lady who spoke previously is right. I think it is a disastrous thing to do not to sustain containment. Containment is widely credited with ending the Cold War. Why shoot this gun, which is going to be heard all around the world, and do it without our best friends?
Later in the program, Reverend Thistlethwaite objected to the frequent use of the term evil by panelists, and at times, even Ted Koppel stepped in to ask the panelists to clarify their positions. Former CIA Director John Woolsey frequently responded to questions about the timing of the war by referring to genetically modified biological weapons.
If Saddam uses biological weapons that have been genetically modified in order to be resistant to vaccines for anthrax or to antibiotics or to smallpox, and you find out because you've waited at some point that it was this six-month period in which he was able to do that, who that is arguing for the delay will stand up and take responsibility and say, gee, you know, I'm really sorry.
It's a heck of a hypothetical point.
I don't think it's hypothetical at all. And nor do people who work on biological weapons.
Demu Smith and Reverend Graylin Hagler from the group Black Voices for Peace chose not to attend the event after their offers to serve as panelists were turned down. Instead, they were invited to sit in the audience and ask questions to the all-white panel. Smith later said he founded Black Voices for Peace to increase the prominence of African-American voices in the debates around issues of war and peace. He pointed out that even members of the Congressional Black Caucus were not allowed on the panel. From his seat, Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. raised this issue.
It now appears that the administration is using the unity resolution as the legal foundation for war in Iraq. Under Article 1, Section 8, the why now question of this show should be debated on the floor of the Congress of the United States, and Congress alone, under Article 1, Section 8, has the power to declare war, not the president when he wants to.
Most questions asked during the taping made it into the broadcast. The viewing audience also saw a no war button worn by a congresswoman from Illinois, and one button calling for statehood for D.C. now. Viewers also saw pictures of maimed and disfigured Iraqi children brought up to the microphone by a woman calling for creative conflict resolution. One question in particular made the former head of the CIA appear very uncomfortable.
As a bit of a student of history, I've noticed that our country has lied and deceived its people a number of different times, starting back with the Boston Tea Party. It said the Indians did it. The Tonkin Bay Resolution, which, Mr. McCain, I'm quite sure you remember that. That turned out to be a big, fat, total lie. We've had an incubator incident with the Kuwaitis, which turned out to be a fabrication, Mr. CIA. Why should we believe anything from the United States government about what Saddam is, has, or might possibly do, considering the history of lies and deceptions that we've had from our government?
Senator McCain.
Congresswoman Diane Watson from Los Angeles was in the audience and was concerned that the comments made during the panel actually set back diplomatic relations.
Well, I was highly distressed. I think the panel on the side of war was absolutely reprehensible in terms of their attitude towards a couple of our allies, Germany and France. And I think for McCain to have said France no longer has credibility is probably the worst form of speech coming from our country to a diplomat. The American people need information, and what they heard tonight was not information.
Why do you think it is now?
I think that this president is desperate. He got out there and he's got to go forward. There is no reason that we have been given as members of Congress for us to go forward now.
Most people in the audience did not get an opportunity to ask their questions and said the questions of why war and why now are still not answered.
Ed Davis, Washington, D.C.
What questions were unanswered?
The oil, you know, like the oil bit was still very distracting in terms of are we fighting war because of the oil? And I think, you know, like it was very evasive in terms of that.
Irene Martinez, I thought they were going to have more thinkers on and fewer politicians and former CIA types.
My name is Amy McLean. I'm 18 years old and I'm originally from New Orleans, but I go to school in D.C. Honestly, I still have the unanswered question, which is why now, which is actually what the debate was about. I really wasn't convinced, and Mr. Koppel actually said this too, that he really wasn't convinced that we addressed that issue to the extent. It was more of people still giving reasons why they think we should go to war, not necessarily why it's so pertinent that we do it now.
For Peace Watch, this is Ingrid Drake from D.C. Radio Co-op reporting from Washington, D.C.
Robert Jensen is author of Writing Dissent and an associate professor at the University of Texas at Austin. He spoke in Porto Alegre, Brazil in late January as part of Z Magazine's Life After Capitalism subconference. Jensen reflected on the uniqueness of the growing anti-war movement in the U.S. in part two of his speech.
The story of the 20th century in the United States, I believe, to a large degree, is the story of an incredibly successful propaganda campaign to break people of what I would say are natural tendencies toward compassion, toward solidarity, toward the search for meaning in life, and to train people toward consumption, isolation, fragmentation, and the belief that affluence will provide the meaning that they sorely lack. So a people subject to that kind of propaganda campaign through advertising, marketing, the media, television, movies, that they should work against their own material self-interest becomes all the more difficult. So one of the tasks of the anti-empire movement in the United States has to be to, in a sense, redefine self-interest, to help people come to a place where they realize what is in their material, short-term material self-interest, an empire that produces cheap goods for them, that gives them luxury on a scale that the world has never seen before, that material self-interest is not in their real self-interest. One way to put this is that the task is to shift people from a focus on their self-interest to what might be in the interest of their best self. Literally reconstructing our sense of self. This may sound overly psychological or depoliticized, but I believe it is actually one of the core political tasks. What has happened in the United States is that the propaganda system, the system of power, has essentially redefined what it means to be a human being. What you all might take to the answer to the question of what does it mean to be a human being? Love, compassion, struggle, solidarity. has been defined out of the United States. And what it is to be a human being is to be comfortable, affluent, protected. Self-interest has come to mean a very narrow self-interest in the United States. And it is very hard to organize people against their own material interests when their self-interest is so narrow. So part of what we have to do in the United States is very different, I think, than what people are doing in other movements in other parts of the world. We have to essentially, I think, rebuild our own sense of humanity in the United States. And that may seem like a frivolous task to people who are literally struggling to feed the hungry, who are literally struggling to keep away violence that is direct. And I understand that. But it is the task we have to face in the United States, because I don't believe we can build a movement that will be strong enough until we can do that. And I think it's crucial to do that. One way to frame this, and then I will stop shortly, is when George Bush, our president, I'm sad to say still our president, when George Bush came after September 11th, right, and the United States faced a fundamental choice. The United States could have, after September 11th, seen in that tragedy the gift of reassessing, the gift of change, the gift of going forward in the world in a new way. The United States had that moment where we could have chosen that new path. And George Bush helped make sure not only that we did not choose that new path, but that no one dared consider it.
Author and Professor Robert Jensen speaking at last month's World Social Forum in Porto Alegre, Brazil. Thanks to Sonali Kolhatkar from Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles for that segment. In these pro-war times, with the Bush administration's buildup for a war against Iraq, some wonder what is on the mind of the young people. Peace Watch producer Reem Kathuda has this report.
Young people in the United States are mobilizing en masse, trying to stop Bush's wars. Besides staging strikes and walkouts, they're often turning to art to convince all in the country to not back up these attacks. "Innocent people don't deserve to live in fear anymore than they deserve to die," writes Joey Dunagan, a young information technology consultant turned techno-troubadour musician after 9/11. An eyewitness to the tragedy, Dunagan wrote, "New York is falling."
Fire in my sky tonight, there's ashes on my street. They're peeling back the layers that suicide can breathe.
Nowadays, Dunagan spends his time roaming the USA with a bass guitar and a laptop with a wireless internet connection, creating and performing songs of social justice and reflecting on what's going on in his homeland, the United States of America. "Fear can be a healthy thing when you talk about criminals fearing their captors," adds Joey Dunagan. "But I certainly hope that when we talk about people of the world having a healthy fear of the United States, we don't mean the same kind of fear as we, Americans, feel from terrorist networks." We caught up with Joey Dunagan as he passed through Washington, D.C.
Still can't see the floor. Almost blindly forward steps, sensing cracks below that I've made to fall before. Running now, not out of fear. See, we've only so many years. Paths have wound round along. long enough. Hold our hands along in love. Everybody's losing sleep.
That was a great song.
Cam Thomas, a journalism student at Howard University and a trainee at the DC Radio Co-op of WPFW Radio, interview him.
Corridor. Mm-hmm. When I hear that song, the reaction I get is like chills up my spine because the picture that I'm visualizing is like war. What kind of picture are you trying to paint to the listeners in this song?
At first is just the idea of walking with a total faith kind of step. So even if you can't see the floor underneath you and you can't see the stuff that's going to trip you up, you kind of know that it's going to be there before you would even see it anyway. And so you can kind of step forward without strategizing, so to speak. And at the same time, to kind of identify with the people out there that literally have been losing sleep, wondering what they can do, what difference they could possibly make. All of us have those same questions in our minds and want to fix things where the leadership and the people that have the power aren't fixing things.
That brings kind of like a little anger and resentment kind of for United States. But I wanted to know, like, right now everybody's going through like this hate period, this sad period, and like this anger period. And how do you expect the listeners to feel once they've heard the song?
I hope that they'll see the way to respond to that losing sleep is simply to go through the day stepping down that corridor, not knowing exactly where you're about to step, not knowing for sure that the floor is even going to be there and not give way, but to just follow your instincts and to do the good that's right in front of you right now.
For Peace Watch, reporting from WPFW, Pacifica Station in Washington, D.C., I'm Reem Katkhuda.
Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian, our editor is Lona Elias, and our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA, Richard Wright, Sonali Kalhatar, Matt Bradley, Doug George, Reem Katkhuda, and Sidrak Franklin. Thanks to Pete Karakis, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks also to our consulting producer, Sam Husseini. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by visiting the website at pacificaarchives.org or calling 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. If you'd like to support this type of programming, we urge you to visit pacifica.org and make a pledge through our secure online website. Or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. Send us your feedback to peacewatch@pacifica.org. You can also visit webactive.com to listen to archives of past Peace Watch programs. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.